1957, the height of the Cold War, the United States and the Soviet Union fear each other's nuclear capabilities and intentions. Both sides deploy spies and hunt for them. Inspired by true events, the message fades out. Using a mirror, a slender, middle-aged man wearing glasses, a dress shirt, and a necktie paints a self-portrait. He crosses his artist's loft and answers the phone. Later, he exits his apartment building. Text appears. Brooklyn. As the painter walks down the street, a stocky man in a suit and hat tails him from the sidewalk. On the subway, the stocky man keeps an eye on the painter.
Next stop is Broad Street. Broad Street will be next.
The painter exits the train onto the platform and walks by the stocky man, stepping out from the next set of doors, who looks around casually with a folded newspaper in his hands. The man follows him down the platform. They walk toward a sign reading, "Exit to Streets." Another man in a suit and hat wearing horn-rimmed glasses follows them from a few paces behind. Two more suited men rush through the crowd. The painter takes out a handkerchief and wipes his nose. The bespectacled man and the stocky man start to lose sight of him in the thickening crowd. The painter disappears in the onrush of commuters. The stocky man removes his hat from his balding head and rubs his mouth with his sleeve. As he looks around uncertainly, he grabs the bespectacled man.
Upstairs, this way, yeah.
They head up the exit to the street level. Two more suited men see them from a newsstand and rush over.
This way?
The stocky man bumps into the painter.
Excuse me.
They both continue on their way. But after a moment, the stocky man looks back and watches him. Now, in a car. Riding in back, the bespectacled man glances out at the riverside through his horn-rimmed glasses.
Go ahead and park around the corner.
Outside, the slender man works on a painting. Setting aside his palette, he reaches down and unscrews a bolt on his easel to adjust the height of one of the legs, then subtly reaches back and feels under his park bench. He retrieves a coin stuck to the underside, then picks his palette back up. Later, he walks down the street. returns to his apartment. He sets down his art supplies, puts his painting on an easel, and drapes his coat over the back of a chair. He turns on a fan, removing the nickel from his pocket, he lays it on a table. He goes into his bathroom and retrieves his razor. Returning to the table, he removes the blade from the razor, then picks up a matchbook and opens its flap. He nestles the razor blade inside. He folds the flap back over to grip it safely, then picks up the nickel. Using the edge of the blade, he pries open the coin and uncovers a folded wax paper wrapper tucked inside its hollow center. He unfolds it. He turns on a magnifying lamp. Removing his glasses, he peers through the lens at a tiny series of numbers on the inside of the wrapper. Outside, cars with government plates speed to the curb, and the suited men flood out. They race inside the building and burst through the door to the man's apartment, their guns drawn. They find the painter smoking in the bathroom in his underwear.
Visitors, you mind if I fetch my teeth?
Colonel, would you turn around, please?
They search him.
Sit down on the bed.
Let's go.
They sit him down, and the bespectacled G-man sits across from him.
The teeth are in the other sink.
Look at me.
Fetch them.
We are agents from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Look at me. I'm talking to you. We've received information concerning your involvement in espionage. You can either cooperate with us right now, or you'll be under arrest. Do you understand, Colonel?
No, not really. Why do you keep calling me Colonel?
You need to get dressed.
We have to search your apartment.
You want? Would you mind if I clean my palette? The paints, it'll get ruined otherwise. It's just behind you there.
He points.
I have a cloth myself. Thank you.
All right, start searching the place.
Thank you.
All right, search the mattress, the bed, the floorboards.
You put that in the ashtray.
His chair.
Take a good look
on the windowsill there.
One of the agents takes his cigarette and turns away.
You see the desk?
The spy picks up his secret message and conceals it under a rag as he wipes it down with dark paint from his palette.
Wouldn't want to get this ruined.
The FBI agents turn his apartment upside down in their search.
Don't say my guy. He's not my guy.
Yes, he's your guy. Who are we talking about?
We are talking about a guy who was insured by my client. So don't make him my guy.
Okay, fine. My point is, the guy insured by your client, he doesn't deny that any of these things happened.
These things?
Yes, these five things.
Wait, hold it. Not five things, one thing.
Clearly, it's five things.
Well, I'm sorry, it's not clear to me. Five things? Explain it to me.
It's self-evident.
Okay, then tell me what happened. Tell me the story in a way that makes sense for five things.
Fine, absolutely. Your guy.
Not my guy. Insured by my client.
Insured by your client. is driving down State Highway 19 when he loses control of his car and hits my five guys. The five guys who hired me to represent them because you're not honoring your claim.
You mean my client is not honoring the claim? The insurance company?
Mr. Donovan, we're all clear on who's who here.
Except my client honors every claim. They do, Mr. Bates. Every single legitimate claim up to the limit of their liability, which is $100,000 per accident in the case of this man's policy. And this is one claim. According to your description, he hit my five guys. The guy insured by my client had one accident, one, losing control of the car and hitting five motorcyclists.
From their point of view, five things happened.
Well, look, Bob, may I? Bob? Jim.
He pats his chest.
If I go bowling and I throw a strike, one thing happened. 10 things didn't happen.
Jim, my guys aren't bowling pins, as much as your guy may have treated them so.
Let me finish. If your house is insured for $100,000 and a tornado carries it away, it carried away one house. It didn't pick up every stick of furniture and destroy it in a separate incident. If that is what you're saying, well, then there is never any limit to our liability, and that is the end of the insurance business. And then, Bob, nobody is safe.